To, da ti vladajo, pomeni,
da te nadzirajo,
opazujejo,
indoktrinirajo,
pridigajo,
ocenjujejo,
presojejo,
cenzurirajo
in ukazujejo ljudje,
ki nimajo za to ne pravice, ne znanja in ne vrline.
Da ti vladajo, pomeni, da si
registriran,
popisan,
obdavčen,
označen,
patentiran,
odpuščen,
preprečevan,
reformiran,
kaznovan.
Pomeni tudi, da si pod pretvezo javne koristi in splošnega interesa
dresiran,
ogoljufan,
izkoriščan,
monopoliziran,
izsiljevan,
izžeman,
varan,
okraden. Pri najmanjšem znaku odpora ali ugovoru
te zatrejo,
kaznujejo,
zaničujejo,
nadlegujejo,
preganjajo,
zmerjajo,
potolčejo,
razorožijo,
zadušijo,
zaprejo,
ustrelijo,
obsodijo,
preženejo,
žrtvujejo,
prodajo,
izdajo
in da bi bila mera polna, te še smešijo, slepijo, sramotijo in onečastijo.
Črna luknja!
Pozdrav, z vami je ponovno Črna luknja, anarhistični glas na Radio Študent. Tokratni oddaji smo vam za začetek pripravili kratko okrožnico, obarvano nekoliko internacionalno, pa tudi lokalno. Sledi živa sila in ker se nekako ne moremo izogniti nogometni euforiji, smo v srednjem delu pripravili pogled na zakulisje dogajanja v Braziliji.
Torej, v osrednjem delu ponovno koristimo transnacionalno omrežjo anarhističnih radijev. Tokrat so osrednji del pripravili tovariši iz anarhističnega radija Berlin. Pogovarjali so se z anarhisti iz Brazilije in pogovor pa se nanašal na FIFO in se preko nje dotaknil aktualnih političnih bojev, tamkajšnjih novih Siriz, in seveda vzpostavil vez med Fifino kapitalistično mašinerijo ter državnim aparatom. V glavnem, veliko vsebine v nekoliko daljšem intervjuju, ampak se splača nameniti nekoliko pozornosti.
Okrožnica. Lokalno je vikend neravno pozitivno zaznamovala Parada ponosa, ki je enkrat več razkrila realen političen domet njenih organizatorjev. Leto dni po kreativni intervenciji na lanski paradi, ki je uspela sprožiti produktivno diskusijo znotraj LGBT skupnosti, je potrebno ugotoviti, da se politični horizonti voditeljic in voditeljev parade še vedno zožijo takoj, ko se je treba lojalno postrojiti za izbranim političnim veljakom. Nič za to. Vsako leto je nova priložnost za vzpostavljanje prostora onkraj spon identitet in hierarhije ob geslu Abolish gender za vse.
V Amsterdamu je prišlo do evikcije zaskvotiranega socialnega in kulturnega centra Falrep, ki bi z julijem obhajal tretje leto delovanja. Prostor se je v kratkem času vzpostavil kot pomembno vozlišče, tako za razvoj radikalnih idej, kot tudi za naslavljanje raznolikih potreb lokalne skupnosti. Sama evikcija predstavlja še en korak v napredujoči gentrifikaciji Amsterdama, saj je mesto z njo izgubilo še enega zadnjih velikih odprtih prostorov. Kolektiv socialnega centra se je ob obilni podpori širše okolice dobro pripravil na evikcijo. Policija je potrebovala celih 13 ur za celotno operacijo. Od tega je 3 ure porabila zgolj za to, da je vstopila v hišo. Začasnemu umiku na vkljub se boj za skupne in odprte prostore vse povsod nadaljuje.
Ukrajina je že nekaj časa globoko v prvih fazah povsem resnične in krvave vojne. Ljudje, ki so le pol leta nazaj na ulicah in trgih zahtevali dostojno življenje, so bili nasilno potisnjeni v vlogo nemih opazovalcev brutalne igre velikih geopolitičnih interesov. Ukrajina je s tem postala še en poligon lokalnih oligarhov in svetovnih velesil, ki se borijo za naravne resurse in konkurenčno delovno silo. pri tem pa se opirajo na raznoliko orodjarno tajnih vojaških operacij. Danes, globoko sredi vojne, je že dolgo pozabljeno bet pozitivnih sprememb, ki je vel po trgu Majdan tisto malo časa, preden so si na njem vodilno vlogo izborile neonacistične formacije. Le te pa so pri tem ključno na vse načine uživale podporo tako imenovanih zahodnih demokracij. Z razdalje 20 let dogajanje v Ukrajini srhljivo dodaja nove razsežnosti k razumevanju tega, kaj se je pravzaprav v 90-ih letih v resnici zgodilo v Jugoslaviji.
FIFA, kapitalizem, nacionalizem, kruha in iger, svetovno prvenstvo v nogometu, Uber Ales. Politiki mahajo, ljudje pojejo himne. Nacija proti naciji, vsi združeni v kapitalistično telo, Uber Ales. FIFA in banka Masterfucks you all, represivni red, vojska, policija, McDonald's, Coca-Cola, Adidas, Nike, televizije, reklame, potrošništvo, prostitucija, izkoriščani delavci, nogomet, gladiatorji, zaprti protestniki, krivice. Krivice. Človek, humanist, izgublja, kapital zmaguje. FIFA in banka Masterfucks you all, vsak dan je vsakdanji spektakel kapitalizma. Svetovno prvenstvo v kapitalizmu, Uber Ales. Uber Ales. Uber Ales. Uber Ales.
Živjo.
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 Živjo. Živjo.
Živjo.
Živjo.
Živjo.
Živjo.
Živjo. Svobodo.
Živi, živi, živjo. Živjo svobodo. Živi, živi, živijo, živijo svobodo.
Živa sila, živa sila v uporu za konec kapitalizma. Živijo.
Sagen Sie jetzt mal bitte
Anarchie.
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 Ob geschichtlich oder brandaktuell?
Mit Berichten und Interviews, mit Beiträgen und Collagen
beleuchtet das anarchistische Radio Berlin das Phänomen des Anarchismus.
Viva Anarchie!
Bienvenido.
Welcome.
Gracias.
Thanks.
En esta entrevista hablaremos.
In this interview, we will talk about various topics, among them the social protests and, of course, the Football World Cup. Before we begin, however, it would be nice if you could introduce yourself. Where are you from and in what were you involved with the social struggles in Brazil?
My name is Danilo. I live in Sao Paulo and I have a lectureship in geography. I've been active in anarchist circles in Sao Paulo for a long time already and take part in various groups. Currently, I'm also taking part in an anarchist center, a so-called Ateneo, with the name Casa Mafalda. This center is also part of the coordination of social movements, groups, and individuals who fight against the human rights violations that are taking place here in the lead-up to the World Cup. This coordination calls itself the Comité Popular de la Copa. In every urban site of the World Cup, there is such a Comité Popular de la Copa. Then there is a nationwide networking of all these committees. People from groups that are active in support of rights of very different kinds all come together in this committee. For living space, for the rights of street merchants, against networks of child prostitution, against the way that the police are organized in Brazil. These are groups that have worked on these topics for a longer time in the city than that now. On the occasion of the World Cup, have joined together. since the World Cup exacerbates those problems even further.
I
think that we'll talk more concretely about this topic a bit later. I think, though, that for an understanding of the current situation in Brazil, it will be necessary to have a bit more of a social and political context, and specifically to know something about what happened in the last years under the government of Dilma Rousseff. So, what happened? How has the country developed in the past years?
¿Cómo se ha desarrollado el país, digamos?
Bueno, creo que no es posible hablar del gobierno de ahora de Dilma sin hablar de los gobiernos que pasaron antes, ¿no?
I don't think it's possible to talk about the current government of Dilma without talking about previous governments. Since Portugal founded, or invented really, Brazil, the same circle of people have always been in power. These people stayed in power until 2002, when for the first time a president was elected who had a working class background. His party, the Workers' Party, PT, emerged in the 80s in the time of the dictatorship. The struggle of the party, which at the time was communist, with a basically Trotskyist tendency, was directed against the dictatorship. In the time between the 1980s and 2002, however, the PT, in the context of the political electoral theater, has again and again made partnerships with right-wing and moderate parties, so that today they can better be described as a social democratic or moderate leftist party than as a leftist party. What happened since 2002 in Brazil with this party in government can be characterized as at least the beginnings of a welfare state. The poorest received money from the government. At the same time, the government put a lot of money into the economic and infrastructural development of the region so that they could attract foreign investments. The government also succeeded at diversifying the economy, which was previously very tightly bound to the US dollar. Now the domestic economy has broadened and has had transactions with the euro, the Chinese yen, or Japanese yen, so a bit of everything. In this way, the country became more economically stable. So when things then went downhill in the USA, the country wasn't pulled down with it in the same way. In order to succeed in government, this party put a lot of emphasis on social movements. As they finally succeeded at making it into the government, they tried to integrate all the leading persons of these movements into the government. The result was, of course, a pacification of class antagonisms. The social movements from below were represented in government and thereby reached success, even if it was only small. Meanwhile, the upper class amassed more money. The banks, the construction companies, the oil companies, they all continued to make huge profits. The situation was a classic social democratic government in a poor country. Years went by, and this government, which everybody thought would be different than the others since it came out of the working class, just continued doing the same shit as the previous government. There was corruption, a lot of corruption scandals. They put more money into the development of the country in the capitalist sense than they put into a real reform of the social structure of the country, like an agrarian reform, an urban reform, a reform of communication media. Nothing like that happened. There was just this offer of bonuses and small financial support. In this situation, a new generation of younger people grew up for whom this Workers' Party stood for everything that was wrong with the world. Since the media, of course, depicted it that way. Those guys are communists, they're friends with Cuba, they're corrupt, they're thieves. As if the previous government hadn't just done just the same shit. So we have youth who don't like this party at all, and an older group who don't like any party anymore, since they didn't like the right anyway, and the left, which once seemed alternative, had also done a bunch of garbage in the 12 years it was in power. In 2013, it then looked like the economy wouldn't continue doing so well anymore. Because in capitalism, it is the case that all economies that go up at some point go down again. The lower middle class, which had a little bit more money available to it, could buy more stuff and had access to the consumer market, already started to have difficulties in a situation that just a few years before had seemed to be a paradise for them. The same thing happened in the middle class. Many were dissatisfied since the spaces which they used to have privileged access to, like airports, shopping malls, spaces in which the middle class went into and out of while the poor remained shut out. They now had to share these spaces with the poorer classes. In general, a great social discontent emerged, and in all the poorer classes, there were, apart from the bonuses, no changes. They are still very poor. For example, the living problem created by this government is a problem which is connected to private property. We are now in the process of handing over private property to people who have never had fixed employment. So they are in no position to pay off the debts of getting their own apartment. Unlike the favelas in the new apartments created by the government, there is also taxes, water, electricity to take into account. So these people leave the apartments the government gave them and sell them to other people who take on the debt, people from the middle class who are a bit less poor. Then they go back to another favela. So the government doesn't solve the basic social problems in Brazil, a government that has only a history of leftism, since its practices are the same as those of a right or social democratic government. So for this reason, the government has met with resistance. This, of course, both from the right, which rejects its workers' background, and also from the middle class, since they are not neoliberal but social democratic, but also from the left, since they are not just leftist. So for the first time in a while, there is a climate in Brazil, a perspective for the self-organization of social movements. Collectives and groups that used to be very small, or practices that weren't widely spread before, like self-defense, the occupation of spaces, or horizontal organizing, now have another position in the social movements and among the population. This became obvious in 2013, when the movement for the free transportation, who had already organized protests against the high transportation costs and campaigned for free local public transportation, basically for the right to the city for all the population, began protests against the annual fare increase. This time, a lot of people came together. The strong police repression finally led to a people's insurrection breaking out, which then also encompassed other topics, the World Cup, education, etc., and whose spirit is still alive. In some places more, in others less. It seems as if the working class, the middle class, and the general population have suddenly recognized what the poor had already known for a long time, that is, that small victories and achievements are fought for on the street. It is not the case that there have never been social struggles in Brazil. There were always struggles from the poor and the invisible. Now this struggle is visible. There were societal classes which the government supported, which, however, were slowly alienated by the government, since the government didn't change anything. There were just minimal changes on very specific points, but at no point was there a reform, let alone something that had revolutionary character. I think that that is basically the social context of Brazil today.
Que parece con una revolución, no sé. Entonces, creo que ese es un poco el contexto social de Brasil ahora.
Ya mencionabas los levantamientos de 2013. Por acá se ve.
You've already told us about the social insurrections in 2013. The situation in Brazil was explained here in Europe, also in the context of the insurrections in the Mediterranean. For example, in Brazil, there seemed to have been the claim, the bus prices are our Taksim Square. Do you see a connection in this sense? Maybe a general global development that is also manifesting itself in Brazil?
No sé, un desarrollo más general mundial que también se sigue en Brasil.
Sí, claro. A mí me parece que hay hoy en el mundo un gran conflicto entre gobernados y gobernantes.
Definitely. To me, it seems that today there is a large conflict between the governed and those who govern. The population doesn't seem to want to be governed anymore in the way that they currently are. And although there is a discontent over being ruled, it is clear that this isn't linked to a political perspective. If we look at the indignados in Spain, or Occupy in New York, or even these protests in Brazil, or what happened in Taksim Square, people know that they don't want to be ruled in this way. They are fed up with representative democracy, but there is not a political perspective. There is just this immense discontent with the existing model of representative democracy. In this sense, the protests have a lot to do with what happened in Taksim Square and in other places on this planet. We could also look at the movement from the other direction, though. When cities in Germany, Austria, or Switzerland decided against hosting the Olympic Summer or Winter Games, then it seems to me totally clear to be only the mirror image of what happens in Brazil. The whole world can see that the country of football is vehemently opposed to football. Obviously not against football as such, but against FIFA, against a government, which is hosting a tournament in which a mega corporation can just do what it wants with the country, which of course hurts the workers and the poor. So it seems to me that the fact that these countries in Europe say no to these mega events directly reflects what happened in Brazil and what happened. I think that there's a discontent. When we look back and consider how everything has developed with the Zapatista insurrection of 1994, Seattle 1999, Argentina 2001, now that we have social networks and the world in general is more networked, this information reaches other places much more quickly, so that insurrections take place temporarily very close to one another. Before, years lay in between the individual countries, even though they were in a relationship with each other. Today, everything happens almost simultaneously. So the thought today is, in which country is it happening next? And of course, in many places, there are social insurrections that we don't hear anything about in Brazil. Just a little while ago, for example, I saw a video on the situation in Bosnia-Herzegovina. What's happening in the Ukraine, of course, makes it onto the TVs because it's huge. However, what happened in Iceland, where there was seemingly also a larger social insurrection with public gatherers, etc., was not talked about in Brazil at all. In Colombia, there was a presidential election a few days ago, I think, and 49% of the population abstained from voting. This discontent with representative democracy can be recognized everywhere, but I fear that there is a lack of a political project which will take its place. Of course, there are small groups that have such ideas as and struggle for them. I think in Greece you can see an organized example of this, but I think there is a tendency of, I am dissatisfied, I want something different, but I don't know what.
Še zmeraj poslušate Črno lukno na Radio Študent. Ostali smo na sredi intervjuja o nogometnem svetovnem prvenstvu z brazilskimi tovariši. Prisluhnimo torej še zadnjemu delu intervjuja.
Bueno, tú mencionabas algunos temas de las protestas, como el precio del transporte público o el tema de la corrupción.
You explained some of the topics of the protests, such as the bus fare increases or the topic of corruption, and you said that you don't think that people have a clear political perspective. What are the other topics of the protests? What are people doing, for example, in connection with police violence and the militarization of cities? Are those also important topics of protest?
La militarización de las ciudades, ¿eso es un tema importante también para las protestas?
Bueno, cronológicamente lo que podemos decir es que pasó primero la protesta por la...
Chronologically speaking, you could say that the protests against fare increases were at the beginning. There was a strong repression from the side of the police against these protests after the media, which is controlled from the right powers, quasi-collectively called for the police trying to create an end to the protests. The larger media basically led a campaign to get the police to end the protests. Afterward, they decided to go over to the side of supporting the protests and depicted them as if it were youth who were going onto the street for a better country and against corruption. This was a method of attacking the government of the Workers' Party. This corruption scandal got the same sort of attention as if it were the only case in Brazilian history. On June 17, 2013, there were large demos with 200,000 people in Sao Paulo, a half million in Rio. And there were a large diversity of topics, many of them introduced by the media, against corruption, for a return of the military to power and other crap of that kind. And there was an immense number of Brazil flags. Because the people who were protesting, mostly the middle classes, had previously never gone onto the streets, so this was a first time for them. I think in such cases it is very common. Also in the protests in Turkey, a lot of Turkish flags were brought out. In Argentina, 2001, there were Argentinian flags. It is a little bit of the expression of the population that I am taking my country back. In Brazil, there were, however, a lot of themes introduced by the right and the middle class. The slogan against corruption can, for example, be extremely easily appropriated, since who would openly support corruption? Nobody. The claim that this was a movement against corruption says exactly as much as if it were a movement for water. Of course, everybody is for water. In this way, the right can easily appropriate this topic. There was an internal split within the protest. The left supported social demands for housing, transport against the militarization of the police and the police violence. The right was rather for the topics being pushed by the media, like the rejection of corruption, for a better country, or for the removal of the president. Many people also called for restoring the military to power. After the protests against the fare increases came, the protests against the Confederations Cup, in Sao Paulo, we had no games in the Confed Cup, but where there were some, this spirit of public revolt remained alive. Huge protests happened where the question was posed of why FIFA can make such a big profit while the population doesn't have good hospitals and doesn't have homes and, in addition to that, have to pay higher fares for their transport. In this way, a questioning of FIFA and the Football World Cup began. In Rio, the protests were continued by teachers who had already been on strike for a while. Then the Black Bloc showed up too. The Black Bloc then became a big topic, and everywhere people were asking, who are these people? What do they want? They want to destroy everything, and so on. In this way, there was an attempt to make the Black Bloc into the bad guys of the demos and the other people into the good. The media, in this way, tried to introduce a division into the demonstrations, and they partially also succeeded at this. Not completely, but definitely partly. This year, it continued with the protests of the street sweepers. They organized a huge strike in Rio during the carnival, which created a big spectacle. Since then, all the streets during the carnival were full of garbage and the people were on strike. A month ago, there were then strikers in the transport sector, among them by the drivers of buses, the metro, and trains. Immediately following that, there was a strike by teachers and in other sectors. So for that reason, I have the impression that the World Cup stirred up a lot of struggles, especially those on the left, which had, to a certain extent, found themselves put on hold, or to say it better, which were invisible. The struggles were there on the periphery, but it all seemed far away. Now everything is in the open. Everyone can see that the World Cup is making the situation worse for all these people who are already living under difficult conditions. Also with the topic of the police, it's the case that for the first time, there were loud and clear demands for a demilitarization of the police. In Brazil, the police is the same police force that was active in the time of the military dictatorship. And the police officers have military training. That means they were trained for war. Now they are constantly in contact with the population, more or less at war against the population. Because when you train the police to be at war with the population, war is what comes out of that. In the Brazilian periphery, the number of youths, especially black youths, who die at the hands of the police is extremely high. Since that June, however, the demilitarization of the police has been demanded very loudly. There is also a proposition about that right now. I have the impression that the discursive political field in Brazil has been opened wider than ever before in history, even wider than it was before the dictatorship. The people are now on the streets, but with the consciousness that their successes depend on their presence in the streets, on the pressure they create, because voting is not going to make anything new happen. There are an unbelievable number of people on the streets who, for example, had never heard the word anarchism before in their lives, but who came to us during the demos and said, "We have to bring this city to a standstill on election day. Nobody should go voting. We can't rely on voting anymore." Because a recognition has arisen that the act of voting constitutes a legitimation and that by participating in voting, we become complicit in this legitimation. So for that reason, we see a great discontent among the population on all of these topics. Truthfully, I also don't know what will happen. Because on the other side, the state just keeps on dishing out more repression. The forces of repression have at their disposal new weapons, new munitions, and more officers, who in part were trained by the Israeli army and police. So for that reason, it's unclear how these protests will continue. There are already a lot of people who, without having done anything, were arrested and basically taken into preventative detention, and it's possible that this will also happen in Sao Paulo. We also don't know what will happen in terms of repression, but we're going to stay on the streets. I think that if the World Cup will have a positive effect, then it's this change in perspective among the population that struggle should be taken to the street, and that collectively we have a lot more power than we do if we just struggle alone. So we hope that struggles will continue after the World Cup and with a lot of energy.
Still, it would interest me what the feeling among the broader population about the World Cup is. Is there, or can you observe, this euphoria, which in my opinion always gets spread in the context of these kind of sport mega events? How many people are there who really reject the World Cup?
¿Cuánta gente realmente rechaza la Copa?
La última pesquisa que hizo la media tenía como 48% de la gente.
In the last survey that was done by the media, 48% of people supported the World Cup, 52% rejected it. So it's basically half-half. In Brazil, for example, it's common to paint the streets with the national colors and hang out flags during these kinds of tournaments. And that's not happening now. There are streets that are painted and have flags, but there are a lot less of them than is normally the case. This morning, I was invited to a presentation about the Comité at a public school in the northern periphery of the city. And I asked the students there if their streets were painted or not. About half said yes, the other half no. Why is that? I think that many people are very dissatisfied with the World Cup. The World Cup is here, but nobody is allowed anything. Nobody from the poor population will go to the stadium because they don't have the money for the entrance. The street vendors can't work. The games can't even be watched in the bars on TV because FIFA trademarked a bunch of terms, World Cup 2014, World Cup Brazil 2014, pagode, a Brazilian style of music. They trademarked a bunch of things that are Brazilian. So the people aren't just prevented from going to the stadium, they are also prevented from celebrating in their neighborhoods with their own words. The discontent is high. When Brazil was chosen as the host of the World Cup in 2007, a lot of people thought that the World Cup would bring the people a lot of good things. Now they know that the opposite is true. All that the World Cup brings to the poor is the worsening of their situation. Those who profit from the World Cup are the rich, FIFA, the sponsors, the construction companies. You can sense an aversion to the World Cup in the population. I think, however, that when the World Cup begins, many people will follow the games and hope that Brazil will win. But a lot of people will also go into the streets. When the finale of the Confed Cup in 2013 was hosted in Maracana Stadium, there were more people protesting in front of the stadium than there were inside watching the game. That is a shock for Brazilian circumstances. Just crazy. Because, of course, here everyone is thinking, hey, it's about football. Everyone loves football. There's doubt this whole crap of modern football, even among the poorer people who, for example, like to bet on football games. There is a general discontent with the World Cup. What will happen? With all these struggles and strikes on the street, I don't know how the population will react. For example, the metro workers will go on strike on June 5th, a week before the World Cup, and they are playing with the idea of allowing the whole population to take the metro for free. If they really do that, they will get a huge support from the population. Imagine for a whole day there's free public transportation in a city like Sao Paulo with 11 million inhabitants. So if they do it, the support for their struggle will rise massively. Similarly, there was already enormous support for the street sweepers who struggled for higher wages and better working conditions. Not even the middle class rejected their struggle. They applauded them and said they were right. That is a new phenomenon in Brazil. That the middle class supports the working class is something totally new in Brazil. Of course, we don't know how far that extends.
So you think we can really expect protests on a larger scale during the World Cup?
I think so. Right now, for example, there is this tour of the World Cup trophy. FIFA displays the cup for about 2 to 3 days in every hosting city, and at each of these places, until now, there were protests. To get a concrete impression, the trophy was in Brasilia for the first time yesterday, and many indigenous people, people from the homeless movement, teachers, etc., came out. There were altercations and many injured protesters, but a police person was also injured. An indigenous person shot him in the leg with an arrow. It seems like an image from the Middle Ages, but that's just what is happening now. That is the level of discontent at the moment. And of course, that isn't just related to the tour of the World Cup trophy. Of course, we know that the World Cup will mean a huge amount of security forces, so I assume there will be big protests that, however, won't succeed at making it close to the stadium.
Do you think that the police would allow themselves, in front of a gathering of cameras from all over the world, to go ahead and use massive violence against people?
That's a question that we, of course, also asked ourselves. That's the reason why, for us, contact to the international media is very, very important, so that they know what is happening here and that reports are published about it. I think that a lot of violence can happen outside of the view of cameras. If it will also happen in front of them, I'm not sure. If we look, for example, at how things were in South Africa, there was a young person who was sentenced to 7 years in prison for stealing a cell phone. Another person was sentenced to 4 years because of the theft of a watch or a digital camera. I can't remember anymore exactly. That happened far away from the cameras. Nobody cared about these cases. And things like that are happening constantly in Brazil. We don't need the World Cup for that. There are deaths, there are imprisonments, and nobody would ever know about them since there are no cameras where this happens. I think, though, that the presence of the entire international media will lead to the police taking more caution and maybe using less violent measures of repression. In Brazil, rubber bullets are still used, as well as tear gas and pepper spray and other things that are termed to be non-lethal weapons. We call them, rather, less lethal weapons. There was, for example, the case of an older woman who died in 2003 while she had breathed in too much tear gas and then suffered cardiac arrest in the hospital and died. So they are not non-lethal weapons. At best, they are less lethal weapons. A rubber bullet that hits you in the eye can still kill you. The police are constantly announcing that they have new equipment, like, for example, sound weapons that make people faint and have seizures, new water cannons, etc. It seems like they have imported a lot of expensive new techniques from Europe that have less severe effects, but that are very effective in their application, for example, in breaking up blockades. In the end, I have no doubt that real bullets will be fired side by side with the rubber ones. That already happened in 2013. Not all the media were there, but it happened. In 2014, it's also already happened, on January 25th, 2014, when during a protest in Sao Paulo, a guy was shot down with two bullets in his chest. He didn't die, but he spent a long time in the hospital.
Okay, to bring the interview to an end, I would like to talk a bit more about FIFA. On the banners during the demonstrations, there was often written, FIFA go home, or something like that. What is the role of FIFA in the current context?
FIFA también en un momento.
FIFA is a mega corporation, right? An NGO who did an internet survey a little while ago to vote for the worst corporation in the world had the following results. In the first place was Gazprom. In second place, the chemical corporation Syngenta. And in third place was FIFA. If we only look at the votes from Brazil, then FIFA would be in first place with a lead of 20,000 votes. So people know that FIFA is just a company here to do business, and the people definitely don't just blame FIFA. The critique isn't just of FIFA, but also the government. FIFA didn't pull one over the government. The government accepted their offer. So the protests are against both FIFA and the government. Against FIFA because of their model of sporting mega events, which are elitist, are aimed at the rich, making the situation of the poor even worse, and which force the population to accept a lot of commercial and political rules that would seem bizarre to anybody on earth. Because basically they are making a profit out of the misery of Brazil. During the construction of the stadium, a total of 9 workers died. And because FIFA is so caught up in their crap, they would never come to the idea of canceling an event because of 9 deaths. For me, 9 deaths are more important than any event in the world. But of course, we know that capitalism doesn't work that way. The protests are against the government because they went along with it all, because they handed over the country to FIFA without, for example, raising taxes at all. What became very clear in looking at this event was that those who profit from it and those who have a very close relationship to the government are the construction companies. These people made a killing with the construction of stadiums, streets, etc., not just in Brazil, but in all of South America, because Brazil is a small empire. It's completely obvious that no matter which party is in power, they will represent the interests of the construction sector and the banks. The critique of FIFA is a critique of a mega corporation that doesn't care about human rights at all and is fully aware that its World Cup concert leads to human rights abuses. Their spokespersons, for example, give statements in which they say that Brazil has an excess of democracy, so that it would be more sensible to have the World Cup in countries with less democracy, like Russia. Jerome Valque said that. I think that these people are aware of the role that FIFA has. I believe, though, that the critiques are much more strongly directed against the government than against FIFA. This also seems to make sense to me, and not because I like FIFA. It seems to me more important that the government is accepting what FIFA is bringing in.
No que me guste la FIFA, pero me parece acertado que se comprenda que el gobierno acepta lo que está imponiendo FIFA.
Definitivamente. Muchas gracias.
Definitely. Thanks very much for the interview. We are definitely assuming that there will be considerable struggles being fought out in the coming weeks. We wish you guys, and especially the committee, all the best.
Deseos para allá, sobre todo también para el comité.
Gracias. Yo te digo que...
Thanks. I can tell you already that it's very likely that we'll have a lot of arrests. So we've been preparing a solidarity campaign for a long time, in which we call for comrades from all over the world to organize solidarity events to financially support the release of the arrestees. There are already arrestees, actually, but there will be a lot more. Finally, I would also like to say that the international website of the Comité Populares is portopopulardacopa.org. On this website, you'll find a lot of articles as well as texts on what we think and do. Many of them are translated into Spanish, English, French, and German. So whoever is looking for more information will maybe find something on this site. You'll also find links there to the comité in all the cities together with the contact information that you can just write to them. And we thank you guys for giving us the space that your radio provides. We also wish you a lot of strength. As a football fan, I'd also like to say that here we are very inspired by the ultras in Germany, the anti-fascist football fans in Germany, fans that struggle against modern football. It seems to us that the World Cup 2006 created some starting points for football fans beyond politics and on the questions of whether they were anarchists or not. They fought the fight for the right of a certain class. What else is there to say? Keep watching Brazil, because some pretty ugly things are probably going to happen here, and we will urgently need international support.
Nosotros definitivamente le vamos a dar difusión a eso.
We will definitely try to spread this information.
Good.
Bueno, ahí quedamos. Muchas gracias.
Okay, then we'll leave it at that. Thanks a lot.
Ciao.
Ciao.
Σήμερα φορές αένα, ζεστό κόκκινο αίμα. Σήμερα οι άνθρωποι μ' αγαπούν. Μια γυναίκα μου χαμογέλασε. Ένα κορίτσι μου χάρισε ένα κοχύνι. Ένα παιδί μου χάρισε ένα σφυρί. Σήμερα γονατίζω στο πεζοδρόμιο. Καρφώνω πάνω στις πλάκες τα γυμνά άσπρα ποδάρια των περαστικών. Είναι όλοι τους δακρυσμένοι, όμως κανείς δεν τρομάζει. Όλοι μείναν στις θέσεις που πρόφτασα. Είναι όλοι τους δακρυσμένοι,
όμως κοιτάζω τις ουράνιες ρεκλάμες και μια ζητιάνα που πλάει τσουρέκια στον ουρανό. Δύο άνθρωποι ψιθυρίζουν. Τι κάνει, την καρδιά μας καρφώνει. Ναι, την καρδιά μας καρφώνει. Στην λοιπόν είναι πλουτής.
Thank you.
σιγάρι in una prassino fanari chiamato inopneuma.
Zahvaljujem se obema poslušalcema, ki sta uspela poslušati celoten intervju. Za njih dva imam tudi par napovedi. Danes se ima v Zasavju zgoditi skupščina sile. Sila se danes sestane v Zagorju. Za več informacij počekirajte socialna omrežja. Sicer pa bo v torek v Rogu potekal Antifa Kung Fu trening, tako da to je eden izmed sklopa, eden v sklopu dogodkov solunske grupe, ki ima v planu sicer pripraviti še 16 dogodkov, dva predogodka, dva podogodka in pa en postdogodek. Kaj pa bo s črno lukno čez poletje? Ne vemo. Pustimo se presenetiti. Ajde, čao.
What's a revolution to you? To kill their bosses and take their money.
Revolution! Revolution!
Dobro, jebate, kak ti možeš u jednoj demokratskoj državi dizat narodne ustanake?